Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Mark and Jamal's romantic weekend will depart in 4 minutes from Platform 6. Your ride comes with a rolling countryside sunset view and a table seat ideal for playing footsie beneath. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
Most people don't expect their life to change overnight, but sometimes one diagnosis, one surgery, one moment, and everything you thought was your life is gone. So the question becomes, who do you become after that? Now, today I am joined by Jenny White. Jenny spent over 30 years as a registered nurse, working in hospitals, ICU, trauma units, leaving a life that's dedicated to helping others. And then everything changed. After being diagnosed with multiple brain tumors and undergoing major surgery, she had to rebuild her life in a completely new way. And what came out of that? Well, something you would never expect. Today, she is a medical thriller and children's book author, and turned her experiences as both a nurse and a patient into a powerful story. And actually, I should say powerful stories, because she has a lot to offer and a lot of stories to tell. Now, Jenny, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you so much, Stacey, for having me. I'm really pleased to be here today.
Oh, you're very welcome. You know, Jenny, I just want to start right here. I want to dive right into it, because it's amazing. Your story is just totally outstanding, because for a lot of people, there's a moment where everything shifts. Now, what was that moment like for you when you were diagnosed and you went into surgery?
Well, it was a bit shocking, to be honest with you. Sometimes the nurse knows way too much about what's going to happen. And at the same time, not really know all the answers that she wants. So for me, it was when I was first diagnosed, I was really quite shocked. I really did not expect it at all. I hadn't been feeling well for just a short while. And actually, one day I thought I was going to have a stroke, and I called 911. They got me to the hospital. And that was when they said, well, the good news is you didn't have a stroke. The bad news is you have brain tumor. So I remember sitting there thinking, did he just say brain tumor? And then the nurse in me kind of clicked in and, okay, where is it? What's it doing? What do I need to do? Who do I need to see? And that started a process. So that was in November of 2023. And then in January of 2024, I had my surgery. And I had to make some choices. I mean, when you're told something like that and you know that you could potentially die, you do things like you write your will, you talk to your family about your wishes, and you start trying to block things into perspective. But I think the worst part for me was actually waiting from the time of the diagnosis to the actual surgery. Once the day of surgery came, which was actually in a different city, I had to travel to a different city to access a specialist who had expertise dealing with my kind of tumor. And I remember we went out for dinner. It was kind of like, I remember thinking as I walked into the restaurant, well, this could be my last dinner. What would I like to eat? And I remember sort of, you know, talking with family, and we were trying to laugh and kind of make the time just go. And then, of course, that night was a bit of a disaster in that I really didn't sleep. You know, I kept thinking a lot about what could happen, what could not happen, that I might die, that I might not die. And as I said, I knew too much. Right. I knew exactly what they were going to do to me. I knew exactly what the process was. And it's pretty intimidating for the best of us.
Yeah.
The day of surgery, I remember walking from the parking garage at the hospital to the actual hospital thinking, well, you know, I really should look around and look at the snow falling and take in that cold air, because it might be my last look around before surgery. And then I was ready. I wanted it done. It needed to be done. I knew it was kind of make or break time. And that's kind of what happened. I have no idea what my poor husband went through, because I was just a little too self-absorbed at that time. And the staff were wonderful. They knew I was a nurse, which was kind of like family taking you in, which is kind of nice. And they made me laugh. And the last thing that I remember before I passed out with the anesthesia was them making me laugh. And I thought, oh, thank you so much. Now, when I woke up, it was actually 4 days later. I was in a coma. I didn't know it at the time, obviously, but found out afterwards. Apparently scared my neurosurgeon half to death. He kept vigil at the bedside basically for a while. And when I woke up, I was in an ICU. I was on a ventilator. I was tied to the bed because I had tried to disentangle myself from the machinery and the IVs and the bandages and all of those things. And I remember waking up, looking around, going, okay, this kind of looks like an ICU. I kind of knew I'd been a nurse, but I didn't recognize the people at the end of the bed. I didn't recognize the man who was my husband. You know, as the nurse in me knew that, okay, if he's here, he's someone important, but I don't know who you are. And that was scary. But I figured, okay, well, just go with the flow and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, it turns out that when I started speaking, I thought I was being very clear in what I was asking, but it was gibberish coming out of my mouth. So I did have to relearn how to walk and talk, which took some time. And my physiotherapist and my speech therapist became my new best friends even when I got home, and things progressed. So that's kind of the journey.
It's an amazing journey. It's a jaw-dropping journey. You lost your memory, your cognitive skills went down the tubes. When all this happened, like, what were you thinking? Like, what were you feeling? Like, that people don't usually talk about, because this is dramatic.
Well, I definitely was scared. I remember as I was lying in my hospital bed thinking, okay, I have a problem. First of all, people were saying to me that they couldn't understand me and be patient. It will come back in time. Keep trying. I know when I went to take my first few steps, it was daunting. It was like exhausting. You know, something so simple and so normal was just really challenging. I had to actually think about moving my legs and getting my feet in the right position. And, you know, holding on to people because I felt like I was going to fall. Yeah. And all of those kinds of things. Not remembering was daunting. I remember thinking, hey, well, you know, here I am. What am I going to do?
Yeah. Wow. You know, you spent decades as a nurse. This wasn't, you know, just a job for you. This was your identity. What happens when that version of you is suddenly gone, because your memory was pretty much wiped out? You know, you only remember like a third of what happened to you your entire life. What happens when your identity is gone and you're left with only a small portion?
Yeah, it's frightening. I mean, there really is no other word for it. I remember when my husband brought me home, I remember looking at the house going, gee, I wonder where we are. I remember asking my nurses in hospital, what's my name? I couldn't remember my name. I couldn't remember my last name. I remember talking to my husband saying, do we have kids? I didn't remember the kids. Now, I did remember I had a dog, and he never left my side, thank heavens, during my recovery, but very scattered memories and ideas.
Wow. Now, did you feel like you had to rediscover who you were?
Yeah, I did. You know, as I was recovering at home, I was exploring basically a brand new environment. And I was looking around at things that I had done in my past. And I was always a big quilter and I loved doing needlepoint and that kind of thing. And I remember looking at my stuff thinking, I have no interest in this. I have no memory of how to use it. What am I going to do now? And that was when someone suggested, I think it was my speech therapist, suggested that I start to write things down. And it turned out that I was able to write. I was able to put my thoughts into words and put them on the paper. But when I went to speak, I was still just gibberish. There was no sentence structure. The words were scrambled. It made no sense.
My goodness. This is a part that really stands out to me, is that everything that you went through, you didn't just recover, you rejuvenated yourself. But how important was writing in this whole process?
Writing was really helpful for me. Sometimes, you know, the exhaustion was there constantly. And that's one of the things with brain surgery, is you tend to have this unexplainable exhaustion that just kind of sucks the life right out of you. So I would only write in very small sequences. Sometimes, you know, I could get a paragraph Sometimes I could get a sentence. Sometimes I could get a page. But what it did is it helped rewire my brain and it helped me trigger memories. And so after I started writing, I noticed I was having more and more dreams. And so the next morning when I remembered them, I'd speak about them and I'd tell my husband about them and say, does this make sense? Is this something from my past that I'm remembering? Or am I making this up with a new imagination? So there was a bit of a journey there, but it did help considerably.
But from what I understand, you know, this wasn't something that you were doing before. This was something totally new that actually helped you reinvent yourself and actually remember things that you didn't remember before.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I was never looking at being a fiction writer. I used to write a lot of academic papers for my profession, but writing academic papers versus writing fiction is a completely different kettle of fish. Now, I didn't wake up one day and decide, you know, I'm going to be a best-selling author. I woke up with the intent of I've got to do something to try and figure out what I'm going to do. And I started taking some online courses, again, that were self-paced so that when I had my bad days, I could just collapse. And when I had good days, I could spend some time and chunk down learning how to write. Yeah. And that's basically what I did.
Wow. Now, you've written medical thrillers and children's books. How did your experience as both a nurse and a patient shape your storytelling?
Well, it's funny, you know, with the novels, as I was writing, The memories started coming back. It was like, oh, yeah, I remember that. I used to really enjoy that. And probably my most favorite type of nursing was the fast-paced environment of like an ICU trauma unit, because you really had to be good at what you did. You had to be a lifelong learner. You had to want to always do your best. Yeah. But it was tough. It was a tough job because it was 12-hour shifts and, you know, you were always short-staffed. So you know, you were always pushing the limits of your capacities. And the thing that I liked about it was the challenge. And so what I did was I took my characters and I created them around people that I remembered. And I created myself around who I thought I probably was back nursing in the ICU. And so my protagonist in my stories, which is Abby, she is basically me reinvented. And so she lives through a brain tumor surgery. Now, she doesn't have a good outcome. I had a good outcome, thank heavens. But it was one of those things that you do as an author. What if this happened? Or what about that? And what would have happened if? Yes. As you start asking those questions to yourself, and that's where the story came from.
Right. Now, what do people not realize about what really happens inside hospitals?
So much. You know, one of the things that we assume when we're a patient of somebody and we're going into surgery is that your surgeon and their team are like on top of their game that day. You know, they didn't have a fight with their spouse. They don't have financial problems that are freaking them out. They didn't just have a car accident on their drive into work. So when we put our hands in other people's put our lives into other people's hands, they are assumed to be perfect. Right. We assume that everything is going to be fine. There's not going to be a problem. We'll get this done and we'll move on. Right. Well, that doesn't always happen. And the example of me having a coma would be a good example of that. It wasn't expected, and yet it happened. We were able to move on from that. And I've been able to obviously regain my sense of speech and my thoughts. And I'm active again, but potentially any of those things could have gone a very wrong way. So that's one thing. Another thing that happens a lot in hospitals is infections. Despite best efforts at cleaning and hand sanitizing and sterilization and all of those things, the reality is that superbugs live in those buildings.
Yeah.
And you can become a victim of a superbug at any time. And that's just reality.
Yes.
Some of the other things is, you know, things like equipment failing. For example, say you're having a scan and you're in the scanner and things are going along and all of a sudden something happens and the scan fails or it misrepresents something. No, that's pretty uncommon, but it can happen. And then, of course, there's the ever-present fact that we're all humans and we all have bad days. We all have good days, hidden agendas. Some of us, we have, you know, thoughts that are not conducive to good care, those kinds of things. And then there's simple things like fatigue and working too much. And, you know, all of those things kind of combine to create challenges, I would say.
Let's talk about something deeper. So how do you mentally rebuild your life after everything changes? Because a lot of people listening may not have gone through brain surgery, but they've gone through something that has changed them.
Yeah. Well, I think you have to have, first of all, a positive attitude and perhaps a strong faith, whatever your faith may be. For me, I came to realize that really I was a spiritual being having a human experience. So the things that were happening in my body were like an automobile. Things break down, things get fixed, and it keeps going. But keeping your spirit alive and choosing to live a life that you want has to be forefront for you. You have to have the will to keep going during difficult times. You have to be willing to try new things, get beyond your comfort zone, and like just dive in and try something. The worst that can happen is you fail. And so you try, that's just feedback. You try again, do something different.
Wow. You went through all this and you were able to rebuild your identity, which is extremely hard. But for a lot of people, it's really hard to talk about these things. You're here today sharing your story, but I don't know if the listeners really realize how difficult it is to share a traumatic event in your life that occurred. A lot of emotions, you know, tend to pop up on the surface as you're sharing your story. And now you've become an author and you've written books. Like, what motivated you to want to write these thrillers and to write your other books?
As I was lying in bed, looking at the ceiling, trying to figure out what I was going to do, I thought, okay, what do I have already that I can work with?
Yeah.
And one thing that I knew I had was 30 years of experience as a nurse in a variety of settings, which really is a minefield for lots of storylines.
Yeah.
And as I was recovering as well, I was watching a lot of TV and movies. And I was thinking, you know, some of these things that I'm thinking about and feeling would be really appropriate to be in a story somewhere, either in a book or a movie or a series. And it does help you stop and think about, could I do that? Would I be successful if I tried that? And that's kind of where it all came from. So I was lying there thinking, okay, time to come to some terms about, here are my limitations at the moment. Here's what I could do to try and mitigate them. Here's where I can grow, and here's what I want to dream about. And so I started dreaming about what would be a life that I would love. If I could do anything, I mean, I've got a clean slate here.
Yeah.
What could I do? And what would I want? And that's kind of where my goal of becoming, you know, the female version of Robin Cook sort of was planted in my head.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I've got the ability to do this. I just have to work at it, learn, and try.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, tell us a little about your books.
Okay, so I'm actually writing a series of thrillers. They are medical thrillers, obviously, because they're going to be taking place in medical environments. And my protagonist will go throughout the series of books, and her name is Abby Roberts, and she is a RN that returns to the workforce after she experiences brain tumor surgery with some complications. Mm-hmm. Builds her character is, she has a lot of self-doubt at the beginning, where she goes back and, you know, she's a bit traumatized by the ICU environment that she used to work in all the time.
Yeah.
All the noises and the smells and the people and the activity, it's quite overwhelming for her. And she starts to wonder, do I have what it takes to come back, or am I brain damaged and really shouldn't be here? And so the course of the story is her awakening to the fact that she's got some challenges. She's taking some risks. She's risking others' lives by being there. And in the first book, she ends up actually having to work alongside the neurosurgeon who messed up her surgery. So that kind of adds a whole different level of conflict to her story and she tries to come back.
Wow. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Where can people find these books?
Okay. So actually the books have been published by Friesen Press and they are available everywhere in all bookstores, online, on Amazon, Friesen Press, Kobo. We've got an ebook, a paperback and a hardcover, and I'm currently working on the audiobook, so it will be available soon.
Now these series, do they come like in a packet or have you just written a few of them so far that are available?
I've written two so far. They're not together as a package yet.
Okay.
The first one just got published. The second one will be out at the end of the year.
Oh, nice.
And that's called Terror at the Manor. So the first one's The Triggering Scent. The second one is Terror at the Manor, and that takes place in a long-term care home or nursing home. And Abby becomes the director of care, director of nursing for them. It highlights some of the challenges that happen in nursing homes that people need to be aware of. And the third book, which is in progress, I'm writing it now, is going to deal with the unregulated body donation and body parts system. Okay. That is very prevalent.
Wow. That is amazing. I love the fact that you took these stories and you're slowly creating a series of books and they're kind of related, you know, in your own past that you can recollect. And I find it so fascinating. I think what you're doing is amazing. If someone was listening right now and you feel like their life didn't turn out the way they expected, like what would you tell them?
Well, my main message is that you can be anything you want to be. And there are no rules that say that you can't reinvent yourself. I basically had a clean slate because I couldn't remember. It was a grand opportunity to just try something completely different. For people who, you know, do have memories, do have a past, do have something that they want to change, just remember that you're in control of yourself. Even though we've been brought up in society with specific ideas of what we should and shouldn't do, that doesn't mean you have to follow the rules necessarily. I mean, as long as you're a good person, and you're kind and you're thoughtful and you give back, I don't think there's anything that you can't do
right,
if you put your mind to it.
I agree with you. And what's one step that they can take to start over for people?
I think where I started was dreaming. So, you know, when we're kids, we tend to dream a lot.
Yeah.
And then as we get a little bit older, you know, society tells us or our parents tell us or our grandparents tell us, oh, you can't do that. You should do this, this, or this, or you should follow this path, you know, go to school, get an education, have a career, buy a house, have kids in that order, right? Well, things have changed. You don't have to do it that way. So if you stop and you think to yourself, what would I really love? If I could have anything, what would I love? Then you can start to create a path by creating pictures in your mind of what you want.
Right.
And then just taking small steps every day to get you to the direction of that dream.
You know, if you think about it, people are always reinventing themselves. You go through life and then there's a point in life where, you know, you may feel like, you know, this journey seems like it's coming to an end. I need to do something different with myself. And, you know, and in a different way, you kind of got that opportunity, not looking at it in a negative way, but you looked at it in a positive way and you reinvented a beautiful new version of yourself.
Yeah, thank you. You know, it's funny. I remember, you know, praying and talking with my God and saying, excuse me, but look, what was this all about? And the intuition that kept coming back was, you weren't listening. You're not done yet. There's more that you need to do. And it was like he rebooted my brain and just made me, it basically forced me to reinvent myself.
I love that. Now, everything that you've been through, what does life mean to you now?
Well, life has always been precious to me. I mean, I have seen so much death over my professional life, you know, held hands, comforted people, been the one that turned off the ventilator and those kinds of things with the family at the bedside. So life to me has always been very precious. You know, I think we're here for a purpose. I think it takes some time sometimes to figure out what that purpose might be, but you know, I think we need to be grateful. I think we need to be thankful and proactive in what we do. And I think as long as you have faith and a vision and some strength that you can really do anything.
I agree with you completely. I really do. I always said it to people. I say it all the time. I feel like we're in boot camp. And, you know, we're here for a reason. We're here. These challenges are to make us stronger and to make us more knowledgeable. And I think there is something on the other side awaiting us. What it is, I don't know. But I definitely think that we are here for a purpose. And it, to me, it's like a learned purpose. You know, like we go through all these obstacles in life. Everybody does. Everybody has a story. And, you know, learn from our story. We take from our story and, you know, we can give back. And that's the,
absolutely
what I find. The people who give back get the most, you know, satisfaction and just being able to help others, like you telling your story. I'm sure you're touching hundreds of people out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's really important. And I think the way you look at the world in general, you have to have a very positive outlook that, yeah, there's some challenges out there for sure, but that you can be part of the contribution to the good part of life. And if you look at things in a positive way, you can't help but build positivity around you and to help others.
100%. 100%. Now, can you tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, I have a website. I'm actually in Ontario, Canada. For those listeners who might be in Canada, I'm a local girl. And I have a website. It's www.jennywhite.ca. Now, there are a couple of Jenny White authors out there, so just make sure you get the right one. One writes historical fiction, and I write medical thrillers, so quite a difference. Yeah, so that's where you can find me. I'm going to be doing some other podcasts as well, and hopefully at some point become a speaker and share some of my messages around the world.
I love that. I love that. Once again, for people who want to purchase your book or check your book out, tell them again what the title is.
Yes. So the debut novel is called The Triggering Scent, and that can be found on Amazon on, well, 40 different platforms. So I'm not going to go through them all. So you should be able to find it.
I love it. I love it. And for the listeners out there, I want you to remember, sometimes life doesn't go the way we planned, but that it doesn't mean it's over. That sometimes it's just the beginning of something we never expected. And you're a trooper, and you're an example of that. You've been through so much in your life, and you didn't stop. You didn't stay stuck in life. You didn't have the self-pity party. What you did is you took that opportunity to reinvent the new you. And, you know, you've done a wonderful job doing that. And now you not only did you reinvent the new you, but you're helping so many people through your story and through your message.
Great.
I really, really admire that. And I love when I see people, you know, it's horrible that we have to go through trauma, but I love when I see people use their experience to help others. And I really admire what you're doing. And I admire you as a person. And I think you have tremendous resilience, and you are just a wonderful person. And inside and out. And I thank you so much for being on the show and just for being you. And your story is truly amazing. I just hugs out to you.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate that. And, you know, just for the people out there who are struggling, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel, and it's okay to ask for help, and it's okay to charter your own journey. Just keep going.
Exactly. 100%. Well, thank you so much, Jen, for being on the show.
Thank you. My pleasure. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.